Light in this present darkness. This is Abounding Grace. Stumbling about in the darkness? Join us now for a time of light in the Word with Pastor Chris Gordon.
So very grateful that you've tuned in today to Abounding Grace Radio. If you were with us yesterday, we are continuing our study of Jesus as the Good Shepherd, as here he is set in stark contrast to the false shepherds of Israel who would not feed the people, who were ruling them with force and with cruelty. And Jesus here is showing himself as the fulfillment of the prophet promise that one shepherd, Ezekiel said, will be over God's people. Here he is. And we looked yesterday that this feeding that they were refusing to do in light of John chapter 9, they had cast out this blind man. They had excommunicated him. They had unsynagogued him. Here Jesus is showing he is recovering the lost. And he's showing us what they needed. He gives this beautiful wayside proverb about the sheepfold, that he is the door of the sheep. He is giving teaching. He gave bread. He gave doctrine. He gave the living and abiding word, which replenishes souls. He made alive hearts with his teaching. And as he spoke, flesh was constantly coming on malnourished and dying sheep. He's recovering Israel. And so I said yesterday, here's how you discern. Here's how you discern true and false shepherds. What is the value of the teaching ministry in the church? I said yesterday, we have eliminated the second service, which, you know, you've got to think about it. Years ago was across denominational lines. Why was it that people went to church twice? Why is it, dear listener, that in the days of Acts, they met all day long? I mean, if we can't make it once to church, there's a problem, isn't there? And then we see here, as we study John chapter 10, what happens? The tragedy when the teaching ministry of the church takes the last place of importance. Parents and their children today are starving. The church is not doing its job. The same problem of Hosea's day. My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. Whose people? God's people. This is our meat. And these sheep are nothing but prey for the wolves. They have no idea that their children are constantly being hauled off to the slaughter as weak, malnourished sheep who don't know the Bible, who don't know basic Christian doctrine. This is a tragedy. Jesus here is the only one that can recover the mess that we're in. He's the only good shepherd. And here he begins to explain his wayside saying, directly applying it to these false shepherds standing before him who don't feed the flocks. And this is justifiable anger. Who rule God's people with cruelty, shutting up the kingdom of heaven. Verse 7, then Jesus said to them, most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. It's another one of these I am statements, and it's really powerful. Notice how he says it. Of a truth, what I'm saying is really important. I am the door. Now think of the sheepfold. I am the door of the sheep. I'm the only one by which anyone has legitimate access into the fold. Anybody who comes in, tries to go in another way, is a thief and a robber. There's no other entrance. It's me alone. I am the way, the truth, and the life, says Jesus Christ. No one comes to the Father except through me, John 14, 6. You can't get into the kingdom of heaven without me. It means that every other world religion that doesn't have Jesus Christ as the door by which they enter is a false religion. So Jesus is going to apply this whole metaphor to him. He does here. I alone give access by which you come in and go out. All the blessings of salvation come through me. Now, I want you to notice what he does. He sets himself as the door in chief contrast to everything that's just happened with the blind man. In other words, this grand contrast is being made between the kind of shepherd the Lord is and the kinds of shepherds that Israel is filled with. Jesus has entered this blind man, this sheep, through him, through the door. He's enfolded him. He safely rescued him. But the leaders had done nothing but climb up some other way, only with the goal of fleecing this man. He says in verse 8, "All who ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them." And he says in verse 10, "Thief does not come in except to steal and to kill and to destroy." I struggled a bit to understand this because the word could mean that all whoever came before him in time. And then we think, is he saying everyone who ever ministered before him, the prophets, Moses, were thieves and robbers? No. Could mean in front of me. I believe what he's saying here is all who have ever come and stepped in front of me, the same are thieves and robbers. I could interpret this using the model of John the Baptist. What was his purpose? It was to prepare the way for the Lord. He said, "He must increase and I must decrease." So put this all together. All who have stood in front of me, think of this blind, poor beggar who's just been healed, what they did to him. They did nothing but intimidate, rule harshly. Notice the first thing he says. They steal. All these people who stand in front of me try to do is steal people after themselves. And with that, they've killed and destroyed. Get that? If they didn't totally and completely agree with these false shepherds and come to them and follow after them and their interpretations of things, those who stood in my place did nothing but force them even to the point of violence, seeking to destroy them. I said yesterday, how much has this gone on in the history of the church? Don't you get a taste of this on the world scene? When you see leaders in Libya and leaders around the country hurting their people, bombing their people. You see, we think that's awful. As awful as it is, the worst thing a leader could do to somebody is spiritually destroy their people. Have you seen the damage, dear listener, that forced intimidation and bullying and guilt-driven chokeholds on people, that they might not be saved if they don't hold to this little fine point of interpretation of the law as their little group has defined it? Really, what's happened is they've found a way to try to justify themselves other than the cross. Have you seen what the sheep are like when you have leaders like that ruling? Look at the fruit. Remember when the adulteress came and poured water on Christ in Luke 7? The alabaster flask of oil. She comes weeping over her sins, pouring oil on him, washing his feet with her tears. Jesus forgives her. Remember what the leader said? "This man, if he were a prophet, would know who and what manner of woman this is who is touching him. For she is a sinner." This woman would have never been talked to, never helped, never loved by these leaders. All they would have faced from them was how great her adulteries were, how great her divorces were, how bad her life was. Never once remembering that the ultimate goal is the restoration of sinners. Oh, the damage upon these sheep. They are miserable, unhappy sheep scattered. You know, it's so sad, isn't it? I've reacted a lot to theater-driven churches who trample God's law with leaders who manipulate for money and prestige. It's the same kind of stuff Jesus is reacting to. But I'm equally disturbed by the approach of a rigid Phariseeism that I often see on the opposite side of the ditch. of leaders who really don't care about God's people at all, and who place such holding guilt on them that they're never defined by the gospel of Christ. No, no, no. But by the way and the manner of their own little interpretations of the law, that unless they're followed, unless they're kept, their ridiculous little interpretations, they can't really be true. They make themselves the only little true churches, and there's no real care for the souls of those who gather. You want to know if that's going on in your church? Ask yourself, is there constant bickering and fighting? Ask yourself, is there constant division and discord? Ask yourself, why is it that there's no joy and gospel love in this place? Listen, I don't care if you've been raised in it or being pressured by a parent to hold on to it. I tell you right now, over the radio, churches that bully and intimidate and force guilty submission by their little interpretations of the law, that is not of Jesus Christ. In fact, he says in verse 12, a hireling, he who is not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. The hireling flees because he is a hireling and does not care about the sheep. There's no love. There's no ultimate care. There's no concern for their souls. There's only the browbeating force of making sure that everyone is in full submission to them. Meet Phariseeism. A hireling is someone who just is working for the wages. What a choice of words that is, dear listener. Here was a blind man they excommunicated for receiving the grace of Christ, and they're furious that he would not agree with them. Did they even care? Didn't they stop and look upon the radiant joy of this man who had received such mercy? Didn't they care about the woman who got caught in adultery? All they cared about were it was her bad divorces and that she was an unclean whore. Oh yeah, strong? Yes. She was a bad sinner. The kind of sinner, by the way, Jesus forgave. Did they care at all about the man at the pool of Bethesda? No, no, no. All they cared about was that he carried his mat on the Sabbath. Didn't care about his soul or the fact that he had been healed or the one who healed him. This goes on all the time. For some people, they'll never receive you until it's complete conformity to their version of the law, while their lives are totally out of conformity to what the law plainly says. This is why Jesus said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you travel the land and sea to win one proselyte, and when he's won, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves." Matthew 23:15. Jesus is contrasting this all today, dear listener, by saying, in contrast to all of that, I am the good shepherd, he says. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. This is why Jesus came, to save sinners. That's what he said in John. I did not come. He did not come to condemn, but to save. Condemnation will have its time. But for now, his purpose is to save. Come to Jesus Christ. Abounding Grace Radio is brought to you by the United Reformed Church here in Linden. We are a church where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught as we preach Christ from all of Scripture. 10 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. on the Lord's days. Thanks for tuning in today. May the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ and all of its glory continue to richly bless you.